Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's the crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover! Step back! That's
awesome. Right here on 960theref.com.
What's up, everybody? Sam Franco, Chris Brame. It's another edition of the Crossover Podcast right here on 960theref.com. Plenty to get to today. We're going to do an all-football show because it's June and because we kind of feel like it. So we're going to talk a little bit of a preview kind of the SEC and the college football in general, thanks to our buddy Phil Steele, whose magazine is out right now. We're also going to talk about Georgia and their scheduling and maybe a divide amongst the fans in terms of what Georgia should do in terms of scheduling in-state opponents. But Brame, we'll start off with the Phil Steele because it's our favorite time of the year and we get to peruse the magazine.
Yeah, I picked mine up on Tuesday of this week as we talk. I think it did hit newsstands on the 26th.
That is correct.
I know he's had it available for downloading and stuff like that before. And, you know, like little things have been, you know, dripping out and little leaks
of
have
course.
Come from it over the past couple of weeks. So you've gotten a few hints at stuff that he's thinking. But, you know, I downloaded it last year. But I still bought, like, the physical copy of it,
too.
Gotta
have the physical
copy. Right. I still like having the physical copy. So I didn't even download it this time. I just waited for the physical copy to come out. And I haven't read it cover to cover yet, but, you know, I've picked up a few things.
Yeah, I've had mine for a little while now because you could, you know, if you ordered it to have shipped to you, he sent it out a little earlier. And certainly some interesting stuff. We'll just go ahead and dive into what he thinks the Dogs are going to be doing this year. And our man Phil Steele likes Georgia to win the East and then lose to Alabama in the SEC title game. He does say that his power ratings have them favored in every game, and that could set up an amazing national title game rematch in the SEC title game between a pair of 12-0 squads. I don't see that happening because it's the SEC, and it's very hard to get through it undefeated. But for him to have Georgia that highly rated just goes to show you that the Dogs are, even though they've lost a bunch in terms of production with players going to the NFL and Sony Michel, Nick Chubb, Roquan Smith, Lorenzo Carter, Davin Bellamy, and so on and so forth, the Dogs, despite losing all that, still will have a lot coming back and still will have a very good shot to make the college football playoff.
Yeah, and I think he is right. As you look at Georgia's schedule right now, the Dogs, I don't see a spot on there where Georgia's going to be an underdog, you know, sitting here at the end of June, obviously.
Maybe Auburn, but, I mean, that's a game in Athens, so why would they be the underdog?
Right. I mean, that'll, you know, right now that stands to be, I think the number that is out there at various Vegas shopping locations is 3.5 for Georgia in that game. But here's the thing. Even Alabama's lost at least one SEC game in 8 of the last 9 seasons. I mean, it really is an inevitability that Georgia's going to take a loss this season. And, you know, while the schedule to me is not, you know, particularly daunting, you know, even a trip to LSU doesn't look like a trip to LSU is, you know, maybe looked in past years because of their current head coaching situation. But there are still potential roadblocks and landmines throughout it, including those two first-month trips to South Carolina and Missouri. I mean, neither one of those games really shape up to be, I think, easy ones for Georgia. And it is interesting that, you know, as the Dogs, like, just pulverized everybody they faced last season, the two teams that were arguably the most competitive against them during the regular year outside of, you know, the game in South Bend against Notre Dame, but, you know, we beat South Carolina by 14 points here, which was our, you know, closest margin of victory until, you know, at least in conference play. And, you know, I mean, the Missouri game, I mean, they scored, what, 27 points mm-hmm. against us? I mean, Drew Locke hit a couple of big passes. Yes, we did almost set a school record for total offense in that game. But, you know, that game was back and forth for a good bit of the first half.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking at kind of a little further on past the SEC title game and Phil Steele's predictions, This is why I have a problem with some, and it's not just Phil Steele. Obviously, I think Phil does a great job, probably the best of anybody that does these preseason magazines. But this is my problem with kind of this whole, I guess, genre or whatever you want to call it of predicting what happens in college football. He's got Georgia and Oklahoma playing again in the Sugar Bowl. That's not going to happen. Like the New Year's Six or whatever you want to call it, you know, it was formerly the BCS, I guess. They don't really like doing that, you know, where it's like a rematch of a game the year before. So why would the Sugar Bowl want the Rose Bowl sloppy seconds? He's got Texas and Boise State in the Fiesta, so I clearly think you could just flip-flop those. You could have Oklahoma playing Boise State in the Fiesta, and you could have Texas playing Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, and it'd be basically the same thing.
Yeah, also, I mean, he's thinking the Big 12 is going to be good enough to get two teams into the New Year's Six slate of bowl games,
but not
none in the playoff.
To get to the playoff, that's right.
Yeah.
His playoff teams, by the way, Alabama, the 1 seed, Clemson, the 2 seed, Washington, the 4 seed, Ohio State, the 3 seed. So he would have Alabama playing Washington in the Orange Bowl in Miami and Clemson playing Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl in Jerry World.
Well, and the other thing that I noticed that I think it'd be a little off is the notion of, because he has Notre Dame in the Rose Bowl. If Notre Dame is a season good enough to be in the Rose Bowl, they will be in the playoff and not the Rose Bowl.
I'd agree with that because, you know, they'll find a way to get them
in.
They're
Notre Dame. So if Notre Dame is good enough to qualify for what would be an at-large bid then into the Rose Bowl, then they would just slot them into the playoff instead.
I'm not necessarily sold on Ohio State. You know, they're a team that I think needs to show me something. They've had it kind of easy in their conference in terms of stuff they've had to go through. I know Penn State was very good a few years back, but it just seems like they haven't been challenged as much because the Big Ten on a whole seems to have been down. So I don't think they've necessarily been challenged. I don't know if they'll make the playoff. You know, some of the other teams he's got kind of flirting with it. I mentioned Texas and Boise State. Mentioned Oklahoma again. Wisconsin, the team he'd have playing against Notre Dame in the Rose. And then a Miami versus Michigan in the Peach Bowl. So, you know, I think, you know, Michigan's a team to look out for. They'll have Shea Patterson playing quarterback for them as he's been cleared, you know, by the NCAA to go ahead and play. So that makes Michigan a lot more of an interesting program to have that quarterback who a lot of people thought might lead Ole Miss to great things before everything kind of hit the fan there.
That which makes that game against Notre Dame for them in the first game of the season really one of the more fascinating games, not only of the year, but certainly of week one. I mean, you got Notre Dame hosting Michigan, and you got that Washington-Auburn game over in Atlanta. But for all of the, you know, the off-season chatter that, you know, people have suddenly noticed, for as much as Jim Harbaugh liked to brand himself and keep his name in the, you know, out there in the press and doing all these wacky things during the off-season, guy's got one win over Michigan State, has not beaten Ohio State yet, and now you've got, even though they don't play each other every year anymore because Notre Dame plays that partial ACC schedule, you do have what would be considered, I mean, historically, really, I mean, Michigan's third biggest rival, Notre Dame. So here'd be his first crack against them. If they don't win that game, then suddenly it's, here's a coach that hadn't been able to beat Michigan's top two rivals consistently enough. I mean, one combined win against both of them, Sparty and Ohio State. And if he was to go 0-1 then against Notre Dame, there's Jim Harbaugh on that rap on him where he's just not beating Michigan's rivals.
Yeah, exactly. So he's got a lot of pressure on him. There's no question about it. Really quickly, I just wanted to run through who he has winning all of these conferences, and I just want to get your take on if you agree with Mr. Steele. We started with the SEC, and obviously he's got Alabama winning.
I have to disagree with that.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously we hope it's Georgia and Alabama playing once again in the Georgia Dome, and this time we hope it goes better for the Bulldogs. But, you know, I'm not going to say that that's like a horrible pick or anything, because it's not, but it's just not the one that we agree with. I think Georgia, you know, is going to have a lot to say. I know that Alabama has Tua Tagovailoa coming back. They have a little bit of a I don't think they should have a quarterback controversy, but apparently they do. So you've got that situation. I think either way, Georgia or Alabama, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say that Alabama's a bad pick.
But only one of those two teams is the defending SEC champion.
That is correct, and it is not Alabama. They once again won the national championship despite not playing in their conference title game. Phil's got Big Ten being won by Ohio State over Wisconsin.
Yeah, I can buy that. I mean, it's the Buckeyes, obviously. I think But if I was going to go with a dark horse in that league this year, I'd probably take Michigan State and go with Sparty. But, I mean, my curiosity with – I mean, Michigan is interesting to me because I do find, like, a lot of the offseason – you know, the noise that surrounds Harbaugh and, you know, wanting to pick at him. They've never finished higher than third in their own division since he's been there. And that's all true, but at the end of the 2016 season, they were a bad spot of the ball away from playing in the playoff. They got hooked at Ohio State. And if they hadn't gotten hooked at Ohio State, they'd have won that game and they'd have been in the playoff. And they ended up in the Orange Bowl that year and lost by a point to Florida State. So, you know, they lost everyone on offense and practically everyone on their defense last year's team, and they ended up 8-5. And I think for them it was kind of expected it was going to be a bit of a down year, and it turned out to be. And now it's just a lot of piling on Harbaugh, which, you know, makes you think that Michigan could rise up from that.
I'm going to pick Michigan to win the Big Ten.
It's not
why.
A bad pick.
I don't know why. I'm just going to. I think Shea Patterson, look, what's the one thing? We've seen Michigan recruit well. We've seen them have talent on defense under Harbaugh. We've seen them have some offensive talent. They just haven't had the quarterback. And now it seems like they do.
Yeah.
So I think that could be a big determining factor in this. And plus, I just hate Ohio State so much. I can't pick them to win the Big Ten.
Yeah,
that's super objective, I know.
Right. The one thing that I think somewhat penalizes Michigan just sitting here right now is their schedule. I think they've got three pretty brutal Big Ten road games. They go to Northwestern the week after hosting Nebraska. Northwestern's off a bye. Then they have to go to Michigan State and go to Ohio State. So that's a tough draw to have to win that division, to have to play two of the other, you know, really four big names in there, because you have to include Penn State in that too. Then they go to Rutgers. I mean, that's no problem. But at Northwestern, at Michigan State, and at Ohio State is a pretty tough road draw for them.
Yeah, absolutely. No question. Moving on to the Pac-12, where Phil's got Washington beating USC to win and advance to the playoff, as we said earlier. I disagree with Phil Steele on his valuation of the Pac-12. He says UCLA is going to finish last in the Pac-12 South. And while I do agree that losing Josh Rosen is huge, Chip Kelly and his schemes and all that stuff, I kind of feel like he's going to be able to grab some wins that maybe you wouldn't think that he's going to. We all know his track record in the NFL. We also know his track record in college. I would say UCLA will not finish last in the Pac-12 South.
There's no way Arizona State isn't the worst team in that division after hiring Herman Edwards.
Hating on Herm?
Yeah. There's no way that they're not going to be the worst team in that division.
His Twitter account's been great. Like, he just tweets these, like, motivational quotes, like, every day.
Right.
So, you know, it's great if you're a little bit down and need some lifting. But that program's going to need much more than that. I totally agree with you. I think UCLA will probably finish kind of middle of the road in the South. You know, I think they'll be better than Arizona State and Colorado. They'll have a chance to be better than Arizona. So, you know, I still think USC probably the favorite in the South, even without Sam Darnold. But it's hard to disagree with Washington winning that conference.
Yeah, I agree with you there. The Pac-12 South, I think, is as wide open a division as there is in college football, too. Because, I mean, I think Utah and Arizona are definitely in play to win that. I mean, I'll say this about the North. I mean, I don't think Washington can just – you can't just pass on Stanford and Oregon as potential threats out there, too. But yeah, I mean, Washington with Browning back, with Chris Peterson there now in his fifth season. They also have Miles Gaskin back at running back. So, and, you know, despite losing Vita Vey on that defensive line, they also return, I mean, most of their defense. They've got like 8 or 9 starters back on defense, too. So, you know, they got a combination of experience, especially at a key position like quarterback, you know, plus a great head coach. So, yeah, I mean, it would be hard to... They're definitely the safest bet to win that conference.
Yeah, no question about it. Moving to the Big 12, he's got Oklahoma and Texas tied for first, and then I guess they'll play again. That would mean they would play again there in the Big 12 title game. And he's got Oklahoma. Well, I'm not exactly sure because he's got Oklahoma in the Sugar Bowl and Texas in the Fiesta Bowl. So I'm not sure if that means he's got one winning over the other. But I will say that it probably will be coming down to either Oklahoma or Texas. But I don't think you can slip on a TCU or a West Virginia this year, especially with West Virginia having the best quarterback in the conference coming back.
Yeah, I mean, West Virginia's kind of been that mindset of it's this is the time for them to strike because they've got the veteran quarterback that is coming back, and you've got Oklahoma's got to replace Baker Mayfield. And, you know, I mean, I think that's going to be kind of a you know, it's an interesting season for them because, yeah, Kyler Murray's going to play for them, but everyone knows it's just one season. He's going to have one crack at doing something in college football, then he's going to go off and play for the Oakland A's. So the pressure's definitely on West Virginia this season. I've already called a dark horse, and I'm not saying win it, but I mean I wouldn't completely just count them out. Is T by T? They did improve defensively last year. You know they're not going to have any problem scoring points, and they get Oklahoma, Texas, and West Virginia all coming to Lubbock this season. So that'd be my team to just keep an eye on as the potential sleeper in the Big 12.
And last but not least, for the Power 5 conferences, we'll go to the ACC because we had the SEC, the Big 10, the Pac-12, and the Big 12.
Clemson.
Clem and his son. That one seems to be pretty easy to go with. He's got Miami winning the Coastal. And by the way, yes, Tech is on the Coastal side for those of you like me who still don't know what the divisions are in the ACC because they didn't really do it to where it's super easy to figure out. But he's got, like I said, Miami and Clemson winning. I think Miami could have another good season, but Miami's season ended last year and I'm just going to say it, in typical Mark Richt fashion. You know, they were great in the beginning of the season, and they came up short in a lot of those games on the back end. You look at what they were able to do early. Like I said, that thumping of Notre Dame, I think, really got people thinking that they would be something special. And then they beat Virginia, but then losing at Pitt the way they did, getting just destroyed by Clemson the way they did in the ACC title game, and then losing to Wisconsin in the bowl game in their own backyard. I mean, that was rough.
No, watching Miami last year was no doubt a play we had all seen before. The Canes were lucky to beat Florida State and Tech. They had those last-second miracle passes against both of them that were basically identical plays in consecutive weeks to win by four and by one. You know, then they almost blew it at North Carolina as a 20-point favorite. But then they turned around. You got Virginia Tech and Notre Dame, those two big primetime games, and they blew both of those teams out. But then, you know, it was just inevitable. You could just smell the loss coming. And the day after Thanksgiving at like 11 a.m. in Pittsburgh, they were just ripe, and that's when they got upset. And then, I mean, Clemson was just way better anyway, and they blew them out. So, I mean, that's the ACC is going to be won by Clemson.
Yeah, that one seems pretty easy to determine. Getting back to the SEC, we'll jump to Georgia and a little scheduling talk here on the back end of this episode of The Crossover right here on 960theref.com. Sam Franco, Chris Brehm with you. But I wanted to go back to the SEC and talk about Phil Steele, by the way. This is kind of what we're doing. We're running down the Phil Steele in this episode. He says his 2018 preseason All-SEC team, if you notice, he does four teams.
Yeah.
So first team, second team, third team, fourth team. None of those teams have Jake Fromm on them. Does that surprise you?
Well, the fact that he has Tua Tagovailoa on one would be the one that I would kind of pick at. But here's the thing with Fromm coming back is in the postseason last year, as good a year as he had, is he wasn't on the postseason All-SEC teams, and the two guys that were are all back, Stidham and Drew Locke. Nick Fitzgerald is there as well. The inclusion of Tua is the one where I would quibble with not having Fromm in there, but I get with Stidham, Locke, and Fitzgerald. But I mean, here's the thing: Fromm is what, 3-1 against those guys,
mm-hmm.
Stidham, Locke, and Fitzgerald.
It's like, what has Tua Tagovailoa done other than play one half? You know what I mean? I get it; it was a great half.
Yeah,
but
he threw one really big pass,
right?
And he escaped one sack on a third down that I think would have. I mean, when Georgia was still up 13-0 in that game.
I was thinking, he was very good. He was very good in overtime. He was very good in the second half. But I just don't see how you could put him ahead of Jake Fromm, maybe other than the fact that Phil Steele might be thinking that, you know, Justin Fields is going to get a lot more time than maybe some other people are thinking.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with Tua, there's no way Jalen Hurts isn't going to play a lot this season. And I think that's how they're going to play that. Because, I mean, there's no doubt one of those guys is going to transfer. And I think Bama's going to give both of those guys a lot of snaps this season, and when they finally get into a game, that might test them, which, I mean, isn't even until probably November.
That's when they make the decision.
Yeah, and then you'll see, you know, that's when maybe Tool will emerge and be the main guy there. But, no, I mean, the thing that is, and not just with Phil Steele, but it's you pick up just
oh,
about
I know where you're going with
yeah
this.
About any preseason magazine, but for as you know as heavy a favorite as Georgia is to win the East this season,
disrespect of Georgia's offensive line,
yeah, or I mean just the players in general. I mean, Georgia has three guys on the first team All SEC.
Well, and none of them are offensive linemen.
No,
like,
not,
this is arguably going to be one of the best offensive lines in the country.
Yeah. And then I mean also DeAndre Swift. I mean DeAndre Swift, who's you know, outside Benny Snell and Damian Harris. But, I mean, Missouri has more guys on Phil Steele's first team All-SEC than Georgia does.
Yeah, and Georgia has what? Rodrigo Blankenship, DeAndre Baker, and
J.R. Reed.
J.R. Reed, that's right. And no I mean, which, first team offense.
Which is another guy would be like DeAndre Walker should have a big chip on his shoulder. DeAndre Swift could have a big chip on his shoulder. But it has just been, because even with DeAndre Walker, I mean, he does have him on a second team, and he's got Swift on his second team, but it's just been interesting to see that when it comes to just sizing up first team All SEC, the lack of Bulldogs. Even that Sports Illustrated last week put out the top 100 players in college football,
mm-hmm.
and DeAndre Baker was the highest Bulldog on it, and he checked in at 46.
Disrespect, man.
Right? Yeah. So
disrespect.
You know, you're like there are 45 players in the country better than Georgia's best player.
You think Kirby's going to use that? You know, a lot of this preseason.
Yeah,
I know that's
no.
like you know maybe don't pay attention to the noise or whatever. But at the same time, yeah, that's got to be frustrating. A team that just played for the national championship and a lot of players that were on that team that are back this year that had big moments and a big impact on Georgia last year. You know, aren't really getting that respect from the national media. So I think that is going to be a little bit of a chip on the shoulder type thing. And that could be very beneficial for Georgia. Let's hope that it is.
No, I mean, it's setting up really well because, you know, for the idea of Georgia needing to be careful not to be complacent and everyone's going to tell you how great you are, you got to worry about that. But then there's not the rat poison, as they like to call it now, of, you know, well, this individual is going to be a star and that individual is going to. No, he can go to, I mean, some of these guys and say, hey, Jake Fromm. They think there are four quarterbacks in the SEC better than you, or DeAndre Swift, who averaged 7.6 yards a carry last season. You're not the best running back in the SEC, or even one of the two best.
I'm drinking that Haterade for sure, no question about it. By the way, Dave and I will have Phil Steele on the morning show at 8:30 on Friday morning, so you can rest assured that we will be asking him about why he doesn't have any Georgia guys on the offensive first team, or really just kind of not as many guys overall as you would think Georgia would have for being as in a good a position as they are. So we'll talk to Phil about that again on the morning show coming up Friday morning at 8:30.
Should be combative with him.
You know, we may throw a few barbs out there, just saying. But something else that came up on the morning show, Dave and I just kind of stumbled upon this, and we were very much in disagreement on this issue. So it was very interesting. I threw it out there on our Twitter poll, which is still active, you know, as we record this. It's been interesting to follow this. It says, should Georgia football play more in-state opponents like Georgia State, Mercer, Georgia Southern, and Kennesaw, as opposed to small schools like Austin Peay from other states? I would have thrown Middle Tennessee in there, too. Twitter does have character limits and things like that. But my opinion is yes. Like, I'm someone, you know, I'm born in the state of Georgia, born in Atlanta. I would much rather Georgia pay it forward to some of those other teams and help out teams within your state. Because if you're going to pay Austin Peay, what's the difference of paying Austin Peay and paying Kennesaw State?
Well, I can't have the option of not playing any games like that against
teams
from any
thing.
State.
That's not the question, because we got some answers on Twitter about it, like, Georgia shouldn't play any games like that. I'm like, well, that's not the question.
Okay.
The question here is, would you rather Georgia, if they're going to play those small games, would you rather them just play, you know, Mercer or Georgia State? Alabama's played Mercer. You know, Auburn's played, I think, Mercer. And we were looking at some schedules down the road. Texas plays Rice three times. Two times in Austin, once at NRG Stadium in Houston, and they also have UTEP on the schedule.
Well, at least
so
those,
Texas isn't scared of those teams.
But I mean, at least those are actually like, you know, FBS programs.
What,
I mean,
Georgia Southern and Georgia State are FBS programs.
That's true. They are FBS programs now. Well, like the argument people make that the schools need to play these games is because, yes, it is financially beneficial to the other ones, and their football programs wouldn't exist if not, which is rubbish, because these schools have been playing football for, you know, as long as anybody has.
Well, but a lot of it is bound for back of some of those games, though. They make those big checks. I'm not talking about like the FBS versions. I'm talking about like the little.
But
ones.
I mean, even those little schools have been playing football for decades.
Well, except Mercer and
before
and
these
Kennesaw.
Schools started playing them. I mean, like, you know, when we played Southern a few years ago, Southern's been playing football since like the 70s.
Of course.
So, I mean, no, Georgia shouldn't be playing schools like that. But if your argument is like, well, Georgia
but you're
has
going
to
play those games.
Yeah, because we have to subsidize those other schools right. So that they can have football programs. Then, yeah, I mean, let's keep that money in the state. Sure.
I totally agree. And that's the thing. One of Dave's kind of, and you know, I was kind of poking at him being like, oh, so you're scared. And that was obviously more of a joke. He wasn't scared. But I don't think that intimidation, fear, whatever, like the fact that Georgia almost got beat by Georgia Southern here a few years ago should have no bearing on whether you schedule Georgia Southern again or not.
Right,
because
shouldn't
be scared of that result happening, because you're Georgia. You should beat those teams. And if they want to come in here and play you, fine. You should beat them.
Well, I get the argument of like Georgia has way more has nothing to gain from playing those schools and a lot to lose if
they
somehow lose
though.
The game.
I think they have karma to gain. And you're paying it forward by helping teams within your own state as opposed to giving that money out. Side of the state to an Austin Peay or a Middle Tennessee. And yeah, I think, look,
you help them too much, though, then you build a monster.
Well, no, but I'm not saying help them too much. I'm just saying, and I'm not saying play Georgia Southern or Georgia State or one of these teams every year, but you should play them. I think you should. Absolutely.
Well, if you're going to play them, I mean, a game like that. But really, Georgia should just be playing those games, period.
Well, no.
No one should.
If I had my way, you would never be allowed to schedule an FCS team again.
Yeah,
because
we need nine conference games.
Right. I totally agree with you there. But in the way that we have things to set up right now, if you're going to play those games, why are you playing Austin Peay?
Yeah. Well,
play
no,
Mercer.
And,
play Kennesaw.
And that's the counter every time when somebody brings up that you know the ridiculous argument of, well, those schools need those games. And so, which, A, bothers me, because then it's like, oh, so – As a Georgia fan, if I want to buy season tickets or even go to that game, then I'm helping subsidize this program, like Austin Peay. No, I mean that shouldn't be for me to do. Georgia should they should schedule like a decent game if they're going to take our money for these ticket packages, but maybe not necessarily just a school in the state of Georgia. But if that's the case, they're like, well, yes, you're helping these programs so they can have a football team. At least keep it in the South.
That's
then.
What I'm saying.
Like when Florida, and I know the game got stormed out last year and they didn't even play it, but like when Florida was going to play Northern Colorado last season, or that year we played Idaho State, mm-hmm. like that, we don't need to be playing those games.
No, I agree. Keep it in the South, but I even take it a step further. Like I don't think, and is Austin Peay, what, that Virginia? Where are they?
No, they're in Tennessee.
Okay, yeah. See, that shows how much I know. But the point is, if you're going to do that, again, why are you giving that money to a school in Tennessee?
Well, yeah, I mean,
you got Kennesaw, you got Mercer at FCS level in your own state, that it's going to be just the same type of game. I think one of Dave's worries was that, well, they're not, like, Austin Peay's not in your state, so you're not going to have as many players from Georgia who felt like they got overlooked by Georgia. And I'm like, I feel like you're thinking about it way too much if you're dissecting it that much.
Well, then you're worried about the threat of losing. But I mean, I get it, because there's nothing to gain for Georgia, and there is that potential threat that is looming out there. So
I just don't think you should be scared of Southern or State or Mercer.
Yeah, well, We shouldn't just be playing.
Well, no, I get it. But again, not the question.
Right.
Like if the question is, if you're going to play those games, should you play them against teams in your state? I think you should.
I don't think that would put Georgia in a position then where they're basically playing the same teams every single year.
Well, I'm not saying to do it every year. I'm just saying that you should favor, or you should be more likely to schedule teams in your state than not. I know you can't do it every year.
Yeah, I mean, throw them a bone every now and then. Right. I'm fine with that. But I mean, at the very least, Georgia should be playing, if they're going to play those games, play teams from at least somewhere within the vicinity of the region, and don't be playing like Idaho State.
Well, I think you should schedule home and homes with, like, I don't think you should be just scheduling home and homes with big, like, Georgia Texas. Of course I want to see Georgia Texas playing home and home, but what about Georgia Purdue? You know, what about Georgia?
You can't go to Purdue.
But that's the thing. You've got to work out the schedule somehow, and maybe to play some of those teams and get them to come to Athens, you'd have to go there. Wouldn't you rather do a home-and-home with Purdue than play, I don't know, crappy Austin Peay? You know,
I'd rather get Purdue to come here and then Georgia pay whatever's necessary to avoid having to go play there.
Well, you could probably do that, too. Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying.
That would be the ideal thing.
Get
there.
More attractive games, though. That's the bottom line.
Oh, no, yeah.
I'd much rather see Purdue. I don't know why I'm signaling them out, but Purdue.
Because they have Jeff Brohm now.
Or North Carolina. Or USF. You know, I'd much rather see games like that than, you know, Middle Tennessee.
No, I'm right there with you. But, you know, the only thing that's going to make that change, the problem is when Georgia plays those games, the stadium is packed. And so as long as the seats are filled for it, then there's no, you know, because we're fans.
So you're saying the fans need to, like, take power into their own hands
I mean, that's the way, if you don't like them, that's the only way to make them stop happening. And I know that's tough to do because it's like.
But you want to see your team play.
Right. Like, what do you mean? I have
to boycott Georgia football.
Yeah, I have. And that's the thing is Greg McGarrity knows that. So they'll just keep shoveling that same crap your way over and over. Because it's like, what are you going to do? Like, boy, man, I've waited all year for this. What do you mean I shouldn't go to see Georgia play Austin Peay? I don't want to see Georgia play Austin Peay. Well, then don't go to the game. Well, I mean, I can't do that. I have to go to the game. I've got to support the team, man.
It's funny how the whole noon kickoff thing comes in because this year, for example, it's like, man, why are we playing Middle Tennessee at night? You know what I mean? Can we get that one out of the way earlier in the day?
No, I know. Well, yeah, that's where.
Austin Peay's the same way.
Well, we're playing
Isn't
them at 3:30. Yeah,
kickoff?
We're playing them at 3, which is great. That's when we should be playing games.
Not against Austin Peay.
Well, I mean, I'd rather have
the thing,
that.
Like that first week, I'd rather play them at noon, get it out of the way so I can watch all the other good games that are
on. Well, yeah, I mean, the noon games are the drag is when you're playing, like, you know, Arkansas at noon.
Well, that's the thing. I don't want conference games at noon, but non-conference crap games like Middle Tennessee and Austin Peay.
Get them over with.
I'm fine with getting those over with.
Or, I mean, just play them like at, like, 1:30.
Well, personally, as someone that has interests outside of sports, like this year, for example, the Middle Tennessee game is on at night, that Saturday night, and that's the same time as Music Midtown. So, you know, for people that like to do multiple things, you know, you're playing that game as opposed to playing it at noon and getting out of the way and letting people go do something else. I know that they Georgia isn't taking into account Music Midtown, and that's way more of a selfish thing from my perspective, but I'm just saying, like, I mean, playing that game, Middle Tennessee and Austin Peay, it you know, more prime slots is just weird.
Well, that'd be a perfect opportunity for them to do you go to Music Midtown instead, and then that's one less person that's watching that crap game.
Yeah, Dave didn't like it when I skipped Samford from Music Midtown last year, so I don't think I'm going to be able to do that again.
Oh. Yeah.
Just saying. All right, that'll wrap things up on this edition of the Crossover. Sam Franco, Chris Brame, thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. It's very easy to do. You just search for the Crossover. You'll see our logo, the little octagon deal. Kind of looks like a stop sign, but a little cooler than that. You can check that out on iTunes. Subscribe, rate, and review. You leave us a 5-star review. That helps us out in terms of pushing us up the order of podcasts and things like that, like iTunes likes to do. So we greatly appreciate any reviews, any ratings that we get. Thank you so much for doing that and taking the time to do that. And thank you for taking the time to listen to The Crossover right here on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame on 960theref.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.